Crisis Radio Network.
I spot the jugs, but the jugs like me. I spot the jugs, the jugs, the jugs.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Dave, what is up, man? Neither of us are in our studios right now.
No, I'm sat in a car park in Glasgow in the rain, and you're on holiday.
I am, yes. Vacation, as we call it here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I like to say holiday, though, now. That's going to be my new thing. I'm going to be one of those guys, one of those guys from the U.S. that uses U.K. words to make me sound cool.
You need to start using the word wanker.
Wanker. Yeah, wanker. That's a good one. You guys have a few that I like. I mentioned, what was that one you guys used for crazy people? Nutter.
Nutter, yeah.
Yeah, the guy was a real nutter. I'm going to start saying that every day.
You got to start calling people wankers because they won't have a clue what you're on about.
Yeah, I think that one kind of translates. I think people know that one.
The thing is now with the world of social media as well, it doesn't have the same effect because people are exposed to the cultures and much, much more. So I think people have a greater understanding of terminologies from one culture to another culture now. Whereas you go back 10 years or so and people wouldn't have had a clue.
You're right. Yeah. So basically we have to thank shows like our program, Drugs and Stuff, for adding to the culture, world culture. That's what we'll call this.
Drugs we're now stuff. A cultural education program, aren't we?
We don't call it culture, world culture and stuff. That's the new name of the show. So we got a lot of good feedback. And as I suspected, there were a few people out there that had not heard of the movies Under Construction, which I was kind of surprised by that. But because I've known them, since they came out. But, last week we talked a little bit about the films and we mentioned how James Grelish, the creator of them, had put together a discount code that he's going to offer the listeners of our show. So I know of a few people that actually took advantage of that and a handful more that had asked. And for just a note, last week we did get a guy who said, where can I find these movies? What was his name? I got him right here. He says, he's looking for where the Under Construction films can be found. And I just want to let him know that we have that stuff right in the show notes of every episode moving forward. So you can go to James Grelish's website and you can find it there. What's going on, Dave? How you been?
Okay, busy. Busy, 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 busy. Brutal Muscle launched this week, which is already starting to pick up with questions on the chemical warfare forum that I run in there.
Oh, very nice.
So that's launched. I mean, it's early days and content is very sparse at the moment, but it will grow and build very, very quickly. Got some really good interesting athletes coming through there, a couple of pro females and
nice.
Samson and Luke himself and Josh Malley, Mr. Universe. So that's looking really good. Did a podcast on Monday on the UK Beef TV.
Well, hold on just a sec. Let's go back to just for a reminder, because we might have people that are tuning in that didn't listen to our previous conversation and they don't know what Brutal Muscle is. So just to remind them, that's the new online magazine / website that Luke Sando put together, right?
Luke and his training partner, Ben Chow, yeah. It's brutalmuscleonline.com. Okay. It's a scripted website. It's basically just an online magazine. The nice bit about it is that you can ask questions of all of the athletes that are on there.
Mm.
So you could directly ask Luke a question. You could directly ask Josh Malley a question, or somebody else. So you can just speak to the athlete and ask them a question and they'll answer, which is nice. It makes them accessible.
Absolutely.
The usual stuff of training plans and that sort of thing, and videos and interviews and all that sort of stuff. And I mean, obviously, as the website grows, the content will grow and the contributors will grow. I mean, I believe there's plans of getting some of the top worldwide pros to contribute to the site as well, even if it's just an article or an interview. So, over the coming months or so, it should flesh out really, really nicely.
Well, let me ask you this. So at this time, is this free or is this a subscription thing at this point? How does that work?
it's a subscription thing, and you know what? I don't even know how much it is. But it's a subscription service. I honestly can't remember. I think it's about a tenner, but I might be slightly out of that. I know it's not super expensive, because especially when you consider the content and the ability to ask questions. And I think that's one of the key elements of the site is the interactiveness of it.
Yeah.
Because you can, you know, it's literally like messaging them directly. And one of the sort of things that have been brought with the site and what we've all agreed is that we will respond to the question. So it's not like you're inboxing these people and just hoping they may see it. You know, you will get a response. Which is nice, and it means you can ask sort of questions that maybe you've always wondered that you didn't know. And because it's because of the site, you choose a login name. You could keep yourself quite anonymous.
Okay.
You know, so if you're a little bit embarrassed because you feel your questions are a bit amateurish, and you've always been embarrassed about asking those questions because you feared ridicule or just felt like you were asking daft questions, you've almost got an opportunity here to ask them anonymously and not feel embarrassed about what the question is, as long as you're not being a dick, obviously. But yeah. because people don't know it's you. And the other good thing about that is, especially with the drug element thing, we think some of the sort of more well-known athletes will ask questions which maybe previously they'd have been nervous to ask about because they maybe felt they should have expected to know what the answer would have been.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure.
So hopefully we'll build the content moving forward. So I'm going to be putting videos up on a weekly basis and articles up on a weekly basis. And obviously the athletes are all going to be putting, they've all got video blogs running on there. A couple of them, I think one of the girls competes in the first pro show this weekend.
Okay, nice.
So that's on there. Luke's going to be doing his next prep for his next show for the site. So, you know, there's going to be plenty to blog into and see every week. And because it's a range of athletes and a range of different style of physiques. Yeah. Like Joshy, I think Joshy's about 6'4" or 6'6" or something stupid.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not very often you get to see an athlete of that stature, of that height. So there'll be uniqueness to him because of his length of his limbs and his height that won't be the same as someone like Luke Sandow, who's 5'10" or whatever he is.
Right. Yeah, you know, Luke is... he's got a lot of potential, Luke Sandow. Even just seeing him the first year he turned pro, I was lucky enough to have been there at the Arnold Classic in Columbus, which he just jumped right into that, which, you know, that took a lot of courage to begin with. One of the biggest shows, you know, in the world, really. And, you know, he definitely hung with those guys, and he's just gotten better since. I just, you know, while we were talking, I was just glancing at some of his pictures, and he really does. He's like the new Great White Hope, in my opinion. This guy could become a Mr. Olympia.
I think with Luke, it's just a case of time. He's still learning his body. He's still learning, you know, how he reacts at this size, and he's still growing. Yeah, so, yeah. There were people that criticized his first show expecting a greater outing, and it was like, it's his first pro show.
Right, yeah. I'm with you.
It's a whole new ball game. Give the guy time. Let him learn. He's still got age on his side. He's got plenty of time.
And he's proven that he can get better from there. You know, and he's, and I guess, you know, it's pretty cool. And this is, I guess, it's kind of selling the brutal muscle thing. But, you know, he, like you said, he's learning his physique. And we can kind of learn along with him if we follow along with what he's doing. So I think that's pretty awesome, man. I just went to the site to check out the registration and stuff. So what we're looking at is it's $6.99 per month for the subscription. So that comes out to like what, 10, 12 bucks or something like that.
So about $10, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, definitely, guys. I suggest check that out and support Dave because you get all this free content. What's that?
Yeah. So it's about the cover price of a magazine, really, isn't it? So it's...
Yeah. Well, and you get all listen, you got free content here, you know, through Advices. And if you guys appreciate that and you appreciate Dave, then one way you can help support Dave is by, you know, supporting the things that he does. Because at the end of the day, man, all the stuff, you know, the time that we invest in these things, this is, you know, time is money, basically. So you are donating time for free right now. And And I know that it's important to you in your life to educate people, but at the same time, it's something I have to face too. We've got to make money, you know?
Well, there's still bills to pay at the end of the day. I mean, that's the cruel truth of it. But, yeah. You know, I think I'd still be doing a fair amount of what I did, even if I don't get paid for it.
Oh, I think we all know that about you, too. There's no question, man.
I do enjoy what I do. But, I mean, it was quite funny this last week. I've been working with two clients that are actually in a relationship together, both joined separately. There was no real interrelationship as to why they joined. They both joined separately, both of their own separate competitive careers.
Okay.
And there was some recovery issues with the male. Anyway, we got that sorted. And he messaged me this week, sort of very grateful that he'd got his partner pregnant.
Oh, nice.
Which was a massive reward for me, just in the fact that I managed. Unfortunately, that now means that his partner is no longer a client because she's bloody pregnant. So it cost me a client. But no, I mean, you know, those sort of things are very rewarding. But at the end of the day, we've all got bills to pay.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, I agree with and I know that the rewards that you get from that are, you know, it's much greater than the pay, that's for sure. You mentioned...
Yeah, but unfortunately, the local supermarket doesn't accept good faith.
Right. Now, I had stopped you so we could talk about Brutal Muscle, but you started telling me about this podcast you were on. What was that show?
Oh, that's UK Beef. It's Aaron Hudson, Dean and Z. It's... started, if I remember rightly, under a different name, we did a recording on Monday. Now they do it slightly different because they literally sort of do the recordings and pump them out immediately.
Okay.
Talked about yourself and Aaron was very complimentary on your professionalism and the quality of your output.
And then today we record from your cell phone and me being like all out of the studio and stuff. So sorry, Aaron.
Well, yeah, but it was one of the few. Aaron had been very, very keen to do a podcast where we weren't answering questions about drugs and we were talking about mindset and just, you know, general roundness of approach to the sport and mental well-being and balancing life and those sort of subjects. And we did. We probably did in total about 2.5 hours, but obviously it was edited down to fit the time slots they have. But enjoyed it. It was a good laugh, to be honest.
So wait a minute. You're telling me you talked for 2.5 hours and not once was nandrolone phenylpropanate brought up?
No. I mean, we skirted, you know, the drugs in a generalization, but we never went into anything specific about drug issues or drug problems or drug cycles or anything of that nature.
I gotcha. That's cool, man. I gotta check this one out. I think they tagged me in the link, so I'll reshare that. I know I shared it on the Advices or Instagram story yesterday. I got to dig in, and that'll give me something to listen to on my trip back from Portland, or maybe if we drive somewhere. That it sounds like it'll be a good show. And yeah, Aaron Hudson is he's a great person, first of all, but second of all, he's a great bodybuilder. I see him as turning pro. There's no question in my mind. I feel like he's definitely got what it takes. He's a great looking bodybuilder.
He's got a lovely physique, Aaron. Very well balanced. I think the only difference is to Aaron, it's not his career.
Yeah, yeah.
I get that. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people realize, but he's actually a wrestler.
Yeah, he's mentioned that to me before. It's that's where he started, right?
Yeah, yeah, and he still does it. And he's got a very successful IT business. And it's bodybuilding for him is more something he does rather than something he is.
Yeah.
And I think he's got to the point in his career where he's like, I don't know if I want to pay the price of moving that step further forward.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I hope, though, that he can get it, because I know that he's got the potential. And I did an interview with him. I've done a couple of them, actually, but the last one was after he started working with Chris Aceto. And I think that the issue with him is it's hard for him to get into the condition that he needs to be, you know, for the stage. And I feel like Chris got him closer than ever that he needs to be, you know, in that shape.
He just that fraction off, and that's all it is. It's just that fraction off. I mean, he carries tons of mass, and he carries it quite easily as well. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy for him to game, that's easy for him to big, but he's comfortable with it.
Oh, yeah.
He sits at 300 pound all year round in decent condition for 300 pound, and he's not killing himself doing it. But I think that's the other issue as well, is he questions whether he wants to go bigger, or should I say whether he wants to do what is necessary to go bigger and have the problems associated with going bigger from where he is.
Mm, yeah.
He's got his head screwed on his Aaron, so I'm sure whatever decision he does going forward, it'll be the best for him.
That's cool, man. Yeah, that's cool you had an opportunity to go on there. I feel like everywhere I turn around, you're doing another podcast or another video. I don't know how you have the time.
I'm just, people are sick of the sight. I mean, I like being busy.
Yeah.
Talking of busy, my next week is absolutely insane.
Oh, you just got back from, you went to Amsterdam, didn't you?
I went to Amsterdam last week, and then the flight got cancelled, and I got stranded in Amsterdam for an extra 12 hours.
Oh, jeez. How was Amsterdam itself?
Very nice, beautiful country, yeah. It was very much an in, go to a gym, train, come out, go home job.
Okay.
So I saw more of the airport than I did of Amsterdam itself. But it was fine, and got back to the airport probably about 5 hours before my flight was due, and just sat in a corner in a coffee, Starbucks or something, and did some work, and then I got a bit of duty free. Went to get on the plane, and no plane. Okay.
What?
So we got cancelled. So unfortunately, if anyone's been to Amsterdam Airport, they'll understand this. It's quite a spread out airport.
Okay.
So it's not, I wouldn't say it's particularly big in comparison to something like JFK, but it's very spread out. And it was literally a 25 minute walk from the terminal back to the desk.
Oh, wow.
So walked back to the desk because there was just nobody around to ask, and this is like 11 o'clock at night at this point. Sorted out a hotel very quickly. That wasn't a problem. Sorted out return flights the next day. That wasn't a problem. Didn't think that I'd gone back out of this controlled area with duty free.
Okay.
So I've got a litre of whiskey in a bag.
Oh, and no.
100 millilitres on hand luggage. So gone to the airport the next morning, gone in early because I've realized this problem overnight. So I've gone in early and gone to the desk and was told, well, you'll have to go buy a bag and pay for it checking in. Which was met with some disgust and some annoyance. I say exactly what I said, where I told them where they could shove the charges, and it was somewhere where the sun didn't shine. but at the end of the day, I don't have to go buy a bag, and as I'm sure you can appreciate, the shops in an airport that sell bags are not the cheap ones.
No, God, no. I just was at the airport yesterday coming out here to Portland. I spent, I bought a kombucha, a water, like a 1 liter bottle of water, and a protein bar, and I gave him a $20 bill. All I got back was a little bit of, I got some coins back. That was it. Some change.
It's worse when you give them the money and they say, yeah, I need some more.
Right.
So I had to buy a bag and then had a big argument with the airline this week about reimbursing me for this bag or what. But apart from that, it wasn't a particularly bad trip. And then this week's been quite quiet. I'm just up in Scotland today.
Oh, no kidding.
Next week I start on the Tuesday.
Okay.
I have a 400-mile drive up to Inverness.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm doing a presentation for the military. Then I'm doing a seminar at Ford's Gym in Inverness on the Tuesday night. Then I'm driving back down to Edinburgh Wednesday morning. I'm doing some PTs and a sort of drop in at another gym. Get back Wednesday evening. Then Thursday morning early, I've got to set off to Wiltshire, which is about 220-mile drive. Then after that, I'm going down into Exeter, which is about another 70 miles on top of that. Back late Thursday night. Then Friday morning, I'm in Nottingham. And then Friday afternoon, I'm in Peterborough doing another seminar and a PT session day.
Oh, my gosh.
And then back late Friday night. Then Sunday morning, I go up to the lakes to do another military presentation and then dropping into the lakes itself for Lake Windermere to see a client and train him.
I would lose 15 pounds of muscle just on that week alone. I don't do well traveling a lot. I have a harder time getting my food in, and then with the extra stress, I'll end up dropping weight real fast in those situations. I'd look like a runner by the end of that.
I'm just sat in the car, and I've got a tub of rice and a tub of chicken breast next to me, and I just reach in and jump away.
Nice.
It's quite, the only thing I don't tend to get a chance to is actually train. That's as it sounds. And to be honest, you know, when you've been PTing all day, you've been dealing with that stuff all day, you really don't want to train.
It's
not actually motivating. It's actually very demotivating. When I owned a gym, I must admit, I used to try and train sort of earlier in the day because I found by the end of the day I had no interest in training because I've been surrounded by it all day.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like if you work at a restaurant, you don't want to eat there anymore after a while.
Yeah. Yeah, you just burn you out a little bit when it comes to actually, you know, desire to train if you're literally beating people constantly. But so busy week next week, and then I'm just waiting for the bookings in for the week after from the military, because at the moment I'm having to leave my diary fairly open and let them lead, because they don't give me a great deal of notice.
Okay.
And then we slowing down a bit then because we're getting close to Christmas. So
takes you right up to the holidays, right up to Christmas time. Yeah. Wow. Well, hey, listen, what do you say we take a quick break and come back and knock out some questions? We'll make it a quicker show. You're in your car and I'm on my holiday. So, but we do have a handful of questions. What do you say?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, guys, we'll be back in just a minute. All right, guys, and welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Dave, we have a bunch of questions lined up, starting from the last episode. Whenever we post these threads, guys, for a new episode, any questions that you want to ask Dave, feel free to post them up. Just post them right in that thread. I just posted up the new episode today, which I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. I really enjoyed our conversation, Dave, about the work you do with the court system. That's such a unique job that you have with them.
Mm-hmm. I've got a report on at the moment. I've got to get done, actually.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it'll be about 24 hours of work, I think, roughly.
Oh, geez. Well, let's see here. I'm going to start with a question you didn't get asked on the UK beef, because it's a drug question. Thoughts on using NPP instead of DECA? Same being the same drug, but with a shorter ester attached, but also keeps the water retention down, commonly known with DECA. Is this a myth? This is from Vinnie Ford on Instagram.
On a pharmacological basis, there should be no difference to the two compounds at all, literally apart from the speed of which the compound is cleared from the body. Because the base is the same, it's nandrolone, it's just the ester that changes. Now, DECA doesn't particularly reduce water retention, not greatly, but generally DECA is used off-season, it's used when diets are a little bit slacker, and as a result, then obviously people do tend to get a bit of water. But I don't find DECA an overly watery drug if your diet is clean and tight.
Okay.
Having said that, anecdotally, it does appear that the faster esters do improve water retention generally. They shouldn't, really, when you look at it pharmacologically, because you are basically still producing the same hormone. But it does seem to appear so, and I think it may have something to do with the way the peak levels peak and trough within the bloodstream.
Okay.
Because if you're using a faster ester, you're going to get a more of a pronounced peak. If you're using a slower ester, you're going to get a more gradual peak. Both drugs, even an N-phase or decadurobolin, so if you're talking about testing nitrate or cypionate or even propionate, they'll all pretty much hit peak value within 24 hours.
Hmm. Okay.
Obviously, the difference is with the propionate, the drop off is a lot quicker.
Hmm.
So you're going to get a very similar hormone climb off all the esters, but you're going to get a lot sharper hormone decline off the faster esters.
That makes sense.
Which is then in return going to be peaked again from the next injection. Where with an anthate or a deconate, you're going to have a much slower decline, so the peaks and troughs are going to be a lot more shallow.
Hmm.
And I think it's that level of stability that allows the aromatase response to be greater.
Hmm.
I mean, deca still aromatizes. It's only about 25%, 20-25% of what test does, but it still creates estrogen. It is a weaker version. It's not as strong as the estrogen that you get from test, but it does still create estrogen.
Sure.
And it also has a bit of an impact on the estrogen receptor. It makes it slightly more sensitive to estrogen as well.
Mm.
But, and obviously it's a progesterone, it acts as a progesterone, so it does stimulate progesterone receptor to some degree too. So that's where your mechanisms are coming from water. But I have found that if diets are tight, that water issue is a lot lower. So there does seem to be a fact that if those peaks and troughs are quite irregular that you'll get from a fast acting, that you don't get the same level of aromatase reaction to the hormone as you would if those levels were a lot more stable.
Hmm.
And I think that's more to do with how our bodies work naturally, because naturally our hormone levels are all over the bloody place on a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's the stability level that pushes the aromatase higher and therefore causes estrogen, which is why you get this difference between long-acting esters and short-acting esters, even though pharmacologically the hormone is exactly the same.
Hmm. Yeah, I could see that. One thing I will note is that what I found, that the first time I ran DECA, and, you know, the first cycle I ever did was like test D-ball and stuff like that. And progressively, you know, I added more compounds, and then eventually I ran DECA, and DECA was the hardest thing that I had ever had to recover from. But then when I've run NPP, it was a lot easier to recover from. Do you think that has to do with the half-life?
I'm honestly not sure. I mean, the reason why DECA is such a hard drug, well, nandrolone is such a hard drug to recover from, is because it has a very strong binding affinity with the receptor.
Okay, yeah.
But the signaling's strong, which is one of the reasons why it has such a high anabolic value in comparison to its androgenic.
Mm, yeah.
It's that binding affinity. So it's that strength at which it locks onto the receptor. So that signaling's strong, which is why you get a stronger shutdown from DECA and Tren.
That makes sense.
Tren being the strongest binding affinity we have of the drugs we use. So the binding affinity is what relates to the strength of the shutdown.
Hmm.
Why you've had a better response as NPB potentially is more likely to do with the fact that the actual dosages are different.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
And that's what some people sort of actually lose a little bit. When you're running a slow acting esters, you will tend to dose a lot higher than you will when you're running a fast acting.
Yeah, true.
So the chances are that your shutdown is actually more dose related and not actually anything to do with the esters within the compounds.
Mm, I could see that, because we're talking like your average DECA is going to be, you know, 200 to 300 milligrams versus the NPP is going to be more like 100. It's going to be a lot more oil to get that same dose. So I can totally see that. Hey, you know, I know you're a fan of DECA compared to EQ, and I have not run DECA in forever. Like 2013, maybe 2012 was the last time I used it. I was inspired. So with this new bulking program that I'm going to do, I got some DECA, and I plan on adding that in. I'm going to keep it at 300 milligrams. I feel like that's a good low dose to keep it at. But yeah, for the first time in, you know, years and years, I'm going to add that back into my program and see how it works for me now.
No, don't blame me if it all goes wrong.
It was that Dave Crossland. He was the guy that said DECA was good. No, of course not. But yeah, that's the game plan. let's see, what else do we have here? Oh, this was Bo Brown. He was the guy who asked on our page about the under construction movies. I've got the link here in case he's not looking at our show notes. It's Under Construction underconstructionthefilm.com. So there you go, Bo. Thanks for asking. Next question. Let's see. Who is this? This is Chris Draper. He says, how would Dave suggest balancing home life and training? 5 days at the gym per week takes away from family. One for me. So that's an effective way to train 4 days. I'm not understanding his question here completely, but still makes progress. I guess he's asking how to balance home life and training. The wording in his question is a little bit weird, so it's not making total sense to me. But he says 5 days per week takes away too much. So it looks like he's saying he's training 4 days a week per session.
I think what he's saying is he's only doing 4 days and he thinks it's limited progression, but he doesn't know how he can do more because it interferes too much with family life.
Okay. But in that case then, I mean, 4 days a week, can he still make the progress he needs to be his best?
Yeah, you just need to train as intensely as possible in those 4 days a week.
So 4 days, that's still plenty of time to say.
Growth is still possible over 4 days. It boils down to level of intensity. If you're going to do 4 days or even 3 days,
yeah,
the need to make sure that you absolutely annihilate those body parts when you're there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I found that if you're struggling to balance with family life, the best way to do it is to do it at a time when it doesn't conflict with family life, and that usually means training first thing in the morning.
Okay.
So that's how I train now. I go early morning, and then that way I don't really miss any family time, and I'm at home in the evening when the family's in.
That's a good plan. Do you eat a meal before you train first thing, and I assume you're up pretty early. Do you eat one meal or do you train fasted?
It varies. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't.
All right. So you can handle that going in and training without having eaten, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I usually get up about anywhere between 5 and 6 in the morning, and then I go and train. And then that way, and then even on a weekend, if it's a weekend, I'll be at the gym for 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Okay. Let's see here. This is from Adil Bassa. He's been a longtime listener of all the advices and bodybuilding nerd stuff. He says, quick, easy question. I've seen bodybuilders on these UK sites taking 25 different health supplements. In your opinion, which is the most important staple health supplements that every competitive bodybuilder should be using, and at what doses? I've seen this, Dave. It's easy to overdo, isn't it? We could supplement ourselves to death out of all our money.
It all depends on where you're lacking at the end of the day. And it also depends on if you're talking about assisted athletes and using preventive subs from a point of view of trying to negate potential damage from the drugs, or if you're talking just a natural athlete and health supplements all general. I mean, I would have said for most people, especially in climates where, like the UK, where we get more dark than we do sunshine for half the time, stuff like vitamin D. Vitamin D deficiency is very, very common in a lot of people. So that's definitely an area I'd look at, is vitamin D. High dose vitamin C. To me, that is one of the most underrated vitamins there are. And it has so many beneficial qualities. High dose will even lower cholesterol. It's a diuretic, so you'll help with excess water. It's an anti-inflammatory, it's an antioxidant. So I'm a big believer in high doses in vitamin C, and proper vitamin C as well, as in types of ascorbic acid, not as in just your standard shitty OTC vitamin C tablets.
Okay.
Which are generally full of fillers. And then you're starting really depending on if you have any particular issues. I mean, if you're using gear, I'd look at citrus bergamot. So you're always supporting your HDL or lipid stabil. So you're supporting your cholesterol management as much as you can. I'd look at, if you're running a high carb diet, I'd be looking at berberine to maintain insulin sensitivity. And then it's more a case of, you know, you've got anti-inflammatory stuff like curcumin and things like that that you can bring in. Glutathione.
Yes, yeah, you got it.
Particularly useful for, obviously, internal organ support if you're a user. Bear in mind with that, though, there are many different formats and only certain formats are readily absorbed. And I can't remember the one now off the top of my head. Okay. It's just gone straight out of my head. But
I'm not sure either then.
Liposomal.
Okay.
Currently, the main, most bioavailable version is liposomal. I know there's somebody, a friend of mine's working on another version that should potentially be a lot more effective. Whereas I can't really say any more than that because as yet he's not got it out there and he's not very protected. But the only problem with liposomal is that it stinks. Mm. And it's like tasting and eating rotten eggs.
Oh, God.
But it makes it very bioavailable. The other problem is that you need a huge amount of liposomal to bind with the glutathione as well, which sort of limits the product a little bit. But very, very, very good product. Very, very useful. But it's more a case of a lot of us, I think, take supplementation because we're led by social media or an influential person or whatever it is that we need it. And I think the healthier approach is to more look for deficiencies, look for areas where it's potentially beneficial, and then implement rather than a blanket implementation across the board, whether you need it or not. I mean, I take very little supplementation and always have done, but I've always targeted it on areas that I know I need support with.
Sure. That's what I try to do too. Like for me, improving my healthy cholesterol is always something I need to focus on. And so the supplements mm-hmm. I take, you know, they revolve around that a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a fish oil, again, an essential fatty acid of some description. Krill oil, fish oil, whichever you want to go for, is another one. But I think, really, you know, the subs are quite basic, and it's the basic tried and tested ones that we've been using forever that are the ones you need to be looking at. And by all means, you know, play around with some of the new stuff and see if you find anything from it. From a blood point of view, you can look at your blood results, or just from a general well-being and health point of view. I mean, I've found a product I've started using from Storm Nutrition, which is these NeuroSupport Max, which is basically a cortisol suppression. Now, I've always had problems sleeping. I've had problems sleeping for a very, very long time.
Okay.
I fall asleep at the drop of a hat. I have no problem falling asleep. I have a problem staying asleep. I've got a very hyperactive mind when I go to bed.
You and me both.
So it's jumping everywhere. Now, this NeuroSupport Max that Strong's brought out isn't actually designed as a sleep aid, but what I found was it helped my brain focus.
No kidding.
So it gave me a more singular thought, which therefore, when I went to bed, my mind wasn't all over the place and I could just be more compartmental with my thoughts and more logic with my thoughts, and that helped me sleep because I was calmer and I wasn't bouncing off the ceiling in my head about what I had to do the next day or the next week or what I'd forgotten that day or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And because also I was more structured in the night, I was more structured in the day with my work and progression. So therefore, I actually ended up at the end of the day not forgetting as much.
Nice.
I found that really, really beneficial.
I think I might need that stuff. It sounds good.
I mean, a lot of it is finding out what the actual problem is you've got. And that's the problem for a lot of people, is because we just don't know what. We've got some symptoms, but we can't quite correlate them to what is causing those symptoms.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of problem with a lot of people is with supplementation is it's very much a kitchen sink approach.
Oh, yeah.
And then you don't know what's doing what. Where if you have a staple and then you add in, you can monitor effectiveness, and if need be, you can pull out.
Yeah. You know, too, it can be tough to sift through what's good, what you need, versus what's just going to be additional, additional bollocks. That's a good word.
How long were we jumping up and down about branched-chain amino acids and essential amino acids and how you must have them and you must have this and you must have that?
Yeah.
And now you get nobody promoting it. Yeah. It's commonly regarded as a complete waste of time and not needed.
Well, and if you're somebody that really enjoys being educated, there's no shortage of media out there, be it articles or podcasts, places that you can go where you're going to, I mean, the main content is oftentimes in certain places, like this is a new supplement. This is a cool new supplement that you should check out. And if you say, listen to that podcast every week and they have a brand new supplement you should check out every week, that could get pretty expensive to follow along with the show, you know?
Yeah, true. And you know, it's like I say, you know, pull something in. If you don't get a discernible difference, pull it back out again.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't see the point in taking something if you don't feel the benefit for it. We know the basic side effects of the drugs. So we know what we're looking for. We know we're looking for anti-inflammatories. We know we're looking for cholesterol support. You know, those sort of things. It isn't that difficult to supplement around that. And a lot of the, I mean, a lot of it is in the supplement as well. I mean, if it's proprietary blend, if it's, you know, all new singing, dancing, put 300% of muscle on in 3 weeks, you know it's a sack of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the outlandish claims. I mean, I know in the UK that the law is changing quite a lot on supplement labeling.
Yeah.
And a lot of supplements now are not allowed to make any label claims.
Really?
It's very limiting to what they can put on labels now regards claim. They have to put content of what's in the supplement, but they've got to be very careful about how they word what it can and can't do. And a few supplement companies are literally just going to the name of the supplement, the ingredient list, and nothing else.
Mm.
So they don't fall foul of the trading standards because they're being really funny asses about what you can put on labels now about what things do. Especially stuff like pre-workouts, you know. I mean, for caffeine, what they're saying is you can put it may decrease the feeling of tiredness.
That's about all they're allowing. Wow.
That's all they're allowing off the back of caffeine. Yeah, it's got very, very strict, and these are laws that they're slowly starting to push through now, regulations that they're slowly starting to implement on supplement companies now. So you'll see a few supplement companies over the coming months, or UK-based companies anyway, changing their labels quite dramatically.
Interesting.
And the labels being very basic and factual and not particularly coming out with, you know, functional promotion. And this is just more a case of just to avoid argument.
Hmm.
It's easier to just do that than it is to try and fight with the trading standards about the qualities and the studies that these supplements are based on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking over at the message board. It's forum.advicesradio.com, or you can just click from the front page of the advicesradio.com website. There's a button there with that says Advices Bodybuilding Forums. You guys can go there, and then in the bodybuilding discussion section, there are threads stickied at the top for all the shows, and that includes a sticky for drugs and stuff with Dave Crossland. Dave, we've got a bunch of good questions over here. I'm going to start with a Dear Davey. We've got a good Dear Davey for you.
Oh, what a...
We've been getting a lot of relationship questions. Sometimes, a lot of times, you know what, two people are asking relationship questions that are related to bodybuilding. I suggest they even expand out. Let's just make this a general relationship question. It doesn't have to be bodybuilding related. That's what I was thinking. Like, let's just turn to Dave for love and relationship advice in general. That's what I wanted. Yeah.
This is going to be fun.
This one is bodybuilding related, though. And this is from Jake. So, Jake, you are the winner of the Dear Davey question of the week. Message me. It looks like you're on the message board there. So you can either private message me there, or better yet, if you're following me on social media, drop me a private message at Facebook or a DM over at Instagram, and I will send you out a free t-shirt. So this is from Jake, and he says, Dear Davey, question here. He says, do you have any tips on broaching the subject of being on gear with a significant other? I started dating my girlfriend as a natty a year and a half ago, but have been on gear for about a year now. Okay, so 6 months in, he started hitting the sauce. Says, I was in prep when we met, and I've explained, I've explained size I've put on since getting on gear is because I'm in off season. It's a dirty little secret of mine, and I feel like eventually I'll have to tell her about it. Or do I? Any tips? Love the addition of this show to the network. Keep doing what you're doing, guys. Thanks, Jake. Okay, so year and a half in now, 6 months into the relationship, he started his first cycle. He has yet to tell her about it. And so far, he's kind of lied about it. He said that that this was just because he was off season, Dave. Does he have to tell her?
I'm a great believer in being honest with relationships, because I very much feel that if you're unhonest in a relationship, then you're not actually with, the person's not with you for you.
Yeah.
The person's with you for the image of you that you portray.
Mm. And do you want that? Do you want somebody to be with you who doesn't even know you?
You're going to spend a lot of your life lying and putting on an act and never really being your true self. And don't get me wrong, lots of people do that. And I've met lots of people in my life that whose relationships are basic lies, and that they play a character when they're with the partner. And they're a completely different person when they were away from the partner. Personally, that's never been for me. I've done it in the past, and I just found it so much more enlightening to just be me.
So yeah.
I'm particularly honest with my wife, and my wife is particularly honest with me, quite brutally at times.
well, listen. What do you get out of that? You get the possibility then of actually truly being able to be emotionally intimate with somebody. If you are going to lie about who you are, and they're going to love that false image of who they think you are, you're never really letting that person in close, right?
No. And the other thing is, it's scary. It is a scary process, but it's so much easier to do it off the get-go because you present who you really are from day one. When you do it off the back of having a pretense or having a persona or putting up a facade, and I understand that because, when we meet somebody, we always want to make a good impression.
Yeah.
You're not going to work up to a girl that you think's attractive in a nightclub, scratching your bollocks, picking your nose, farting and burping and going, yeah, I love fans are coming back to mine for a shag.
Yeah, and telling her all about all the bad things you've done in your life,
It's not really warming, but at the same time, you've got to sort of, you've got to introduce them to the real you fairly quickly if you want that relationship to be based on truth and honesty moving forwards. And if you hide from your partner, then who are you to judge when they hide from you?
Ah, that's a great point.
So he's already on a bit of a back foot. Now, whether he continues that deception is definitely down to him. The problem is if he is discovered by accident, it's not the fact that he's using gear that's damaging, it's the fact that he's lied. So what else has he lied about?
True.
It's that trust breaking, and that becomes more of an issue the further down into a relationship you get. If someone lies to you in the first 2 or 3 weeks, someone lies to you in the first 2 months, first 2 or 3 years, first 30 years, that's the longer you're together, the more a deception is, it becomes a bigger problem than itself, because it's the deception that's the issue, not what the lie's actually about. I mean, we all tell little white lies because we know we've done stupid stuff and we know we're going to get shit for it. So that's nothing new. But ongoing deceptions where you hide something from a partner isn't really about what the deception is. It's more about the fact that there's a deception there in its own right. So personally, I would have said that the sooner he can come clean, the better. But there are ways you can approach this as well. So, you can test the water by discussing somebody else as a third party who's gone on gear and using.
Yeah.
Or an aspiration to compete with a certain federation that would require you then using. And obviously, quite often, the need for education is there, because if the person in question isn't exposed to the bodybuilding community or isn't exposed to the drug culture world, they're not going to know a lot about it, and generally their information is probably going to be very sensationalistic and very media-based.
Oh, that's a good point.
So you're going to need to educate as well in that process. The benefits of your partner knowing you're on is you've got someone to shoot those awkward places, and you've got that safety net, because if he walks out of the house tomorrow morning with his partner, steps into the road and gets knocked down, and then he is rushed to hospital and the doctors need to deal with him on certain levels and need to know what's going through his system, you have a partner there that can say he's using this, this, and this.
That's true.
If she doesn't know, then they don't know. So I've always advised that if you use gear, that you have at least one person in your trusted close circle that is aware of exactly what you're doing.
Okay.
Because then if something goes pee-tong, they can save medical practitioners a hell of a lot of time by saying, well, he's taking this, 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 and this.
What's that phrase you use? Because I've heard you say it before. Pete what? Pete Tom?
Pete Tong.
How do you spell that?
Anyway, it's the name Pete, P-E-T-E.
Yeah.
And then the last word is T-O-N-G. There is a DJ in England called Pete Tong. He's a dance DJ. He's been around for absolute donkey years. He's sort of regarded as one of the creme de la creme when it comes to dance music DJs.
Okay.
And it's rhyming slang for when it goes wrong.
Yeah, I figured that. I just didn't know where it came from. Pete Tong.
All right.
I'm going to work that into my new vocab. That's going to be part of it.
Okay, well, that can be the phrase of the day, can't I? Pete Tong.
Pete Tong, I can use that one.
But yeah, so when things do go wrong, or if they go wrong, you have at least somebody there that can provide information that actually might be very beneficial at the time.
That's a good point.
Particularly if you're using drugs like insulin.
Oh, yeah.
Now, because that then becomes medically, you know, crucial if you've been admitted to hospital after a car crash and you've had a shot of insulin.
Oh, God.
Which means you're not going to get your food intake for the next few hours. The doctors and nurses are going to wonder, why is he going hypo?
Yeah.
What the fuck's going on?
Even if they figure it out, you know, they might not be looking for that.
So there are benefits to being home with your partner. So I think it's a case of approach the subject. I would always say, if you can, be honest, but obviously that's down to how important the relationship is to you.
Yeah, let me spin this so this is pretty black and white so far. I'm going to gray it up a little bit for you, Dave. Now, here in the U.S., using steroids is illegal. So you are admitting that you're a criminal technically, that's what you're saying, if you use that. And like you said, education is a big part. But if you're dealing with somebody who doesn't know, and they were to think of, oh, this is not only a drug user that I'm talking to, this is a drug user that is using needles. That starts getting even scarier. Now I'm dealing with this person who's using needles, and this person is breaking the law. I almost feel like you might want to be careful, because you could get yourself in a position, and I've seen this happen, where you want to be open because you want that opportunity in your relationship to have this greater level of intimacy. But then if things go Pete Tong in the relationship, see, I already did it. Then now you have a liability on your hands. You have somebody that could then get you in trouble, somebody that could turn you into the authorities, somebody that could tell all your friends and family, people that could then, you know, blow this up on you, and it could become a negative thing.
I've seen it happen in custody battles. I've seen it. Sure. In fact, I was in court last week on a supply case where the girlfriend chopped him in because he dumped her.
Yep, there you go.
There is an element of risk there. There is an element of risk, which is why I've always felt if you're clear from the onset, then you don't get into a relationship, you don't get into a situation where the person's going to feel the need to do that.
Okay.
Because some people do that in a relationship based on the fact that they just don't have the knowledge and they feel that as a good citizen they should report it. But let's be truthful, the vast majority do it because they're just bitter and twisted and want to get a pound of flesh back off the person.
Absolutely.
And it is an element of risk, I agree. But then we're also looking now at a situation where you're really in a relationship with somebody who you shouldn't be in a relationship with, because I don't think anybody chooses to be in a relationship with somebody who has the potential to be that bitter and nasty and twisted, unless you've done something that causes that.
Yeah.
So if you've been caught with your dick in something else, then you sort of brought it on yourself, dickhead.
That's a great point. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, at the end of the day, it's you wouldn't want to be with the person who would that may not have been the right relationship for you to begin with, is what you're saying.
I think that's an area where a lot of people struggle with. Yeah, you invest time in a relationship and energy and money and everything into a relationship to then have to then realize after 18 months, you know what? I fucked up. This isn't right. And that's a difficult decision to make.
Yeah.
And we will quite often lie to ourselves and reason things away because we don't want to face the harsh reality that we made a mistake.
That's a good point.
And it's a difficult one. I mean, it's the same reason when your current missus starts criticizing your ex. You tend to defend your ex, not because you're defending your ex, but you're actually defending your decision to be with that person.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, you're not saying, oh, no, actually, my ex wasn't that bad. Because at the end of the day, your current partner's information on your ex has come from you. So then, generally speaking, their knowledge about your ex is what you've told them, unless they actually knew them. But in most cases, their information is because of what you've told them. So they're not repeating anything that you haven't said initially. Most people get defensive because they take it as a personal criticism because you chose to be with that person.
That's a good point. Let's move forward. We'll do one more question here and then call it a day. But once again, Jake, or I think you're going to say his name on the board, Jake, drop me a message, man, because you have won yourself a free Advices Radio t-shirt. I'll get that sent out. And Dave, we have so many more guys from the UK listening now. I'm sure it's not going to be cheap to send it to them. But hey, it was worth it because that was a great question, man.
You know what? If we get enough, we can do a Valentine's special and do a whole love puff podcast for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, we'll just call it like Dear Davey. It'll be the new show. All right. This is from Lee. He says, gents, question for the show concerning protocol. I am 29 years of age. Been lifting in the pursuit of a bodybuilding physique now for about 6 years. 5 feet, 9 inches tall, 225 pounds, currently at about 16% body fat. I am working with a coach and we are currently trying to add as much muscle as possible for the next few months. My current gear use is Test, about 500 milligrams a week, and DECA, 400 milligrams a week. I recently started using insulin, Humalog, fast acting, to test the waters and see what kind of muscle I can add. Loving the insulin pre-workout pumps are unreal. My question to you, Dave and Scott, is what could I do? What could I be doing better considering gear protocol? I have some Anavar, but have not started that yet. Would this be advantageous or overkill? Also, is the insulin too much? I truly feel good on it and pumped, but I know a lot of people think it adds on too much fat. Is there something better that I could be using? Diet is currently about 3,200 calories, carbs being the highest, followed by protein. Gear has been blasting cruise for the past 2 years.
First thing I would say is you're going to get very little in the way of muscle growth out of the insulin, but what you will get is a size increase, which you will think is muscle growth. And as you are already experiencing, very big pumps, a lot of blood volumization in the muscle during training, which is very pleasurable. It is. But the problem is then that you will feel you've probably achieved a greater status in your training because of this huge pump you're getting from the insulin than from the fact that you've worked the muscle as hard as it needs to be worked.
So you think he could cut himself short? He could cut himself short by feeling that he reached the pinnacle of that workout with the insulin and actually had been able to do more, but stopped shy.
Yeah, definitely.
Interesting. Interesting.
The other element of there is obviously that when he stops the insulin, he's going to be resistant, and therefore he's going to have a predisposition to storing fat.
Okay.
Insulin doesn't make you fat. Excess calories make you fat. Insulin doesn't magically cause fat deposits in that sense. Excess calories will make you fat. The insulin is useful if you have got to the limit of your eating capabilities. So when you get to the point where you are really struggling to eat more food, then you start adding a small amount of insulin with meals to aid digestion and to increase the nutritional transit post-meal and to allow you to actually increase calories furthermore.
So 3,200 calories, he's probably not at that limit yet.
No, saying. I wouldn't have said he was at that point. The other thing is, obviously, if when you start getting to your utter eating limits, you may find that you're starting to also see your blood glucose rise slightly. So a small dose of insulin, i.e. a couple of IU, is going to keep the beta cells sensitized. When you start pushing into higher dosing, then you'll start to desensitize them. And you'll find this with a lot. This the more is better approach just isn't true.
Okay.
With his drug dosing, to be fair, he's still on relatively reasonably medium to low cycles. I mean, he's got a total input there of, what, 800?
It looks like maybe 9, because he's 500 test, 400 deca.
Oh, is it 400 deca? But I'd be more tempted to run tests in the 250 to 300 range and then increase the deca.
Really? Really?
Yeah, well, when you look at these drugs' anabolic to androgenic ratios, you've got test, which is 100 to 100.
Yeah.
You've got deca, which is around the 140-odd to around 46. So it makes sense that a higher deca is going to give you a higher anabolic overall and actually a lower androgenic overall.
So
you're going to get more, on paper, you're going to get more growth out of, if say you've got 900 mg to play with, you're going to get more growth out of 600 deca to 300 tests than you are out of 600 tests to 300 deca.
Now, when I started reading about gear early on, I was always under the impression at that time that you wanted to run your test higher than your deca to keep from getting the quote unquote deca dick. You think this will not be an issue for people though, I take it.
Generally, there will be the odd person that is susceptible, but generally, no, it's not an issue. And the issue generally arises from the fact that they just mismanage their drug protocols. So if you start getting erectile issues with deca, the first thing you're going to look at is estrogen, and the second thing you're going to look at is prolactin.
Okay.
If they are out of whack, you're going to adjust them so they're not. And then you'll probably find you don't have any erectile function problems at all, because 250, 300 mega test is going to produce enough DHT to support erectile function and libido up to doses of in excess of 1.5 grams a deca without a problem.
Really? So how would you go about then controlling this estrogen and controlling this progesterone?
I will always start a cycle, and I will always start with Novadex as my estrogen control. And then what I do is at 3 weeks, I test prolactin and I test estrogen. I'll then bring in.
Oh, I lost you, Dave. Hello, hello.
In your system, which is toxic.
I lost you, Dave. Hey, Dave.
Sorry.
No problem.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I lost you. Could you start that again? Can you hear me?
I said, yeah. So basically, you start your test and deca cycle. Then at 3 weeks, you test for estrogen and prolactin.
Okay.
You would then use, I would recommend then Aromasin. I'd always have a baseline of Novadexin anyway. I'd then add in Aromasin. And the reason I choose Aromasin over Adex or Letrozole is purely because it is a suicide. So therefore, I don't actually affect aromatase production. So I don't get a rebound post-usage. Mm. And it's a lot gentler on lipid profiles. Adex and Letrozole are very harsh on lipid profiles and only worsen the problem that we get from using gear with lipids already.
Okay.
And I would also look at prolactin, and if that's starting to elevate, then I'd bring in CABA to control prolactin. And generally speaking, most people on that sort of protocol will feel very, very good and will get no issues. you need DHT. DHT is a basic hormone in our body for function, but you don't need shitloads of it. And so now we're running a drug cycle that is a lot lower androgenic, so therefore a lot less toxic, and a lot higher anabolic. Sorry about that. And a lot less anabolic. Sorry, a lot more anabolic, so a lot more promoting towards growth.
Okay, interesting. Interesting.
Also, bear in mind that DECA is an anti-inflammatory as well.
Yeah, that's the main reason I wanted to add DECA into my cycle, is I figured the inflammation factors would be a good one, plus the fact that it is so anabolic. So this is interesting, man. I haven't heard many people suggest to use test in that fashion with DECA.
I mean, a lot. There was a trend towards DECA-only cycles, which I don't. Most people, 95 people that actually run a true DECA-only cycle, will find it about 5 to 6 weeks to start having problems. Most DECA-only cycles include Dynabol, which obviously does cause some estrogen, and so therefore negates some of the problems with DECA-only cycles. But a true DECA-only cycle, most people run into issues at about 5 to 6 weeks. First 4 weeks, you can usually get away with it and feel quite good.
Okay.
Prolonged usage will cause problems. There will always be exceptions. You know, it's the human body. There will always be freaks. There will always be exceptions.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would probably switch around and I would push test down at 250, 300, and I'd put the extra onto the DECA. I would drop the insulin completely, and I'd look at pushing the calories cleaner but higher. But only slowly. So, and obviously, if he's not growing, then I'd also have a good overhaul of his training as well.
Yeah, that makes sense, man. So the fundamentals. If he's not growing, then it's go back to those basics, and it does make sense, man.
Always go back to the basics first. When you know those basics are nailed 110%, then look at increasing the dose. But always go back to the basics first.
All right. Well, good stuff, Dave. We did cover a lot here. We do have more questions, but as I mentioned at the start of the show, guys, when we post out these episodes, feel free to post right in those threads, or you could go over to the forum too, forum.advicesradio.com, and you can ask over there. Next time when we start back up, I'm going to clear through all of the remaining questions in the forum first. So we've got that going for us. If you want to get a question in, that will be the first place we'll take them from on the next episode. And Dave, you've got a report to write, don't you?
I do. I've got a client to meet now. Train a client, and then I've got to get back home. And yes, tomorrow will be report.
Nice. I am. I'm going to go train with Lindsay. We're going to decide. I think we're going to hit some back. And then after that, there's a beautiful waterfall that we're going to go hike to. And I guess there's a restaurant over there too by the waterfall. So we're going to go. Or by the hike, at least. So we're going to go over there. I hear there's some delicious raviolis. I need to get my hands on some of those.
Well, I'm going to attempt to drive home through what I believe is called Storm Doris.
Oh, God. That doesn't sound good.
I don't think it's particularly harsh. I think it's just a bit of a blowy, windy, wet thing. Okay. It's been rather windy and sort of pissing it down with rain all day. So it's just going to be more of what I've already had all day anyway.
Well, be safe, my friend. I'm glad that we could. I'm glad we could make the time and still pull the show together this week.
Yes, lovely. And I will speak to you soon.
Yes, sir. Guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. We will see you soon. 1, 2, 4, go! Drop out. Never trust a fucking hippie. For that matter, I don't trust anyone. Advices Radio.